Blog Talk Radio.
Mark Bolan and T-Rex there, my childhood heroes. One of the great things about doing this job is I get to pick the tunes. And yeah, Mark Bolan and T-Rex, one of my heroes from the 70s. Interestingly enough, died 1 month exactly after Elvis back in 1977. And nobody really noticed, which was a bit sad because obviously everybody was still upset about Elvis. But anyway, on a happier note, welcome to our 19th show, dear listener. I'm James Longmore, author and obviously radio personality now, which is kind of something I never set out to be. But hey, you know, these shit happens, as they say. Extina, bless her, my glamorous co-host, who always adds a wonderful feminine touch and a little bit of sanity to proceedings, is not with us this evening. She says she's got a bad back, but I have my suspicions. When she phoned in, we heard this. So I think maybe she's horizontal for different reasons, but so hopefully she'll be sobered. I mean, Her back will be better for next week. So hey, we've got a great. I'm going to be in trouble for that now. I think she's listening. Hopefully, she'll be too drunk to remember tonight in the morning. So I'm okay. We got a great show. Or I got a great show this evening. We've got a couple of fantastic authors. We have Andy Pellequin and Michael Gagan, both fantastic authors. Going to be talking about their work. Hopefully, having a bit of banter as well. I have to say, I missed the banter with Xtina. For those of you that have listened before, hey, thank you for listening again. Yeah, so, you know, usually we sort of banter on about things like bananas and Donald Trump, and there's an awful lot of difference there. Funny enough, I had a political discussion with my 7-year-old daughter this evening, who said she wouldn't vote for Donald Trump because she believes he would make bad decisions. That's from a 7-year-old. I don't know where she got that from. But as I say, out of the mouths of babes, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he's on hold, hopefully, through the miracle of modern technology and AT&T willing. We should have Andy on the line. This is always the bit where it's nervous time. Andy, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Oh, thank goodness for that. there's always that couple of seconds between me saying hey there and the guest answering. There's always the day you've gone off, you know, you've got a sequel. How are you, after an intro like that? Oh, well, hey, you know, credit where it's due. So, no, thank you so much for joining us, Andy. How are you this evening?
I'm super good. I think I was following in Xtina's footsteps, and I've got a little bit of that going on over here. Back pain, I mean, not anything else.
Oh, the back. Well, yeah, you have my sympathy. I know back pain can be certainly, you know, he's suffering the next morning, as I understand. I'm jealous now. I want to drink.
Head.
I want to drink. Well, that's it. I think you drink enough. You know, it doesn't cure the back pain, but it certainly makes you not really care that much about it. But,
yeah.
So where are you? Where are you calling? Where are you calling us from?
From San Diego, California.
Oh, so, do you know, many years, my first trip to the States many years ago, on a business trip, funnily enough, about 10, 12 years ago, probably, you know, we actually went to the zoo. San Diego Zoo, which was awesome, and we caught a Padres game, and I can't remember who they were playing there, but they were absolutely massacred. It was people were leaving halfway through. have they improved any over the last few years?
Oh yeah, every year it's a bit of hit and miss with them. That was a pretty crappy baseball pun, in case any of you.
I was going to say it was on the game we saw. It was more miss than hit. Honestly.
Yeah.
But hey, the zoo was fun. And funny, here's a little fun fact. My wife got all excited. We actually saw the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile parked up in the car park of the zoo.
Oh, wow.
And I love telling this story. Sorry, I don't want to take up your time, Andy. But we're in San Diego Zoo. And we got our free gallon refill soda cartons and the hats and everything. But I still wear my San Diego Zoo baseball cap. We've been in the reptile house. We've got a great reptile house there. Anybody who's been or thinking of going, and we were just looking at all the snakes, and we were at the it was actually the green mamba enclosure, and we saw it looked like the light fitting had come loose, and you actually saw the tail end of the snake disappearing in the light fitting. I wonder where that leads. We thought so. We didn't think anything of it, and we left the reptile house to be almost trampled by a rather panicked-looking zookeeper guy with a big snake hook pelting towards the reptile house. It makes you wonder how many people actually got bitten by that damn thing. I mean, you know, green mambas are not to be trifled with, but that could make a very good horror story, couldn't it?
Yeah, it really, really makes the whole zoo experience come to life when there's life or death in the line.
Well, it adds a frisson, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, hey, you're here to talk to us about, obviously, your book, Blade of the Destroyer, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm going to say. Dark fantasy. I must admit, I'm a sod for this. I'm a bugger for this. I always read the excerpts that our guests send in because I just can't wait. So I have read, and it is very good reading. Tell us a bit about Blade of the Destroyer, Andy.
Well, basically, it follows a very unlikely protagonist. Instead of your white knight or king or magician, you've got a half-demon assassin with a cursed dagger that is a voice in his head and drives him to kill. So it's definitely not your typical fantasy book.
Awesome. So you've taken the fantasy genre and sort of turned it on its head a little bit. I like that.
Absolutely. And actually, that's one thing that I continue to do through the 6-book series is that the typical heroes become the villains. Like in the second book of the series, he meets a knight, and this knight is, you know, pure of heart and honorable and all of that, and the knight ends up being one of the antagonists later on in the book in the series. And so it's a really interesting look at sort of not genre reversal, but role reversal. You've got the priests and the wizards and the kings and the nobles being the bad guys, and the assassins and the thieves being the protagonists. And that's a really fun line to walk, because you've got to make them relatable characters that people can identify with, but then you don't want to make them heroes. You want to keep them very, very squarely in the realm of anti-heroes. And it's a challenge that I love. It's why I write this series about the assassin. I started another one, the first book's coming out in January or February, about a thief. So I love writing about the darker side, both of fantasy and of human nature.
Wow. So you say it's a 6-book series. So is this the first book, is it, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Wow. That is. I have to say. I mean, you know, speaking as a fellow writer, you know, the thought of committing to something like a 6-book series terrifies me. To be truthful, I mean, to commit to that length of story arc and that amount of time to that is I bow down before you. I mean, so, yeah. you're either incredibly brave or crazy, one of the two.
I'm gonna say leaning more towards crazy right now. It actually started out as a trilogy. It was intended to be the first mm-hmm. book in a trilogy, Blade of the Destroyer. It started out as a graphic novel, in fact.
All round, yeah.
And the publisher, the graphic novel publisher that I sent it to, passed on it. So I thought, well, I'll just turn it into a novel. And when I wrote the first book, I sort of had a few ideas for books 2 and 3, but I didn't know where it was going to go. And by the time I finished writing book 2, I realized that 3, 4 wasn't going to be enough. And so about a year ago, as I started working on book 3, I came up with the rest of the story and realized it needed 6 books to tell the story, the journey of this character, because the character is very much your typical villain. I mean, he's half demon, and then he's an assassin for hire. So he's definitely someone who needs a very long character arc to end up as the person that you want to root for.
So I can imagine
so
that there's. Sorry, go on.
What were you saying?
I was going to say I can imagine that there's so much you can do with a character like that. I mean, so many facets to what makes him him. You know, you've got the otherworldly plus the fact that he's an unsavory character for his human half as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very much one of the main conflicts is himself. In the second book, the people that he runs into are almost incidental to his struggle, his internal struggle. The second book is really about the conflict with both his human and demon side and sort of trying to find a way to balance them out. And then the rest of the books continue on looking at the more external struggle. But it's a really fun story to write because I don't have to, you know, I don't have to make him a noble character or an honorable character. He's just got a very simple code of law, code of ethics to follow, and that's it. Someone gets in his way, he can chop them to pieces with impunity. So it's definitely much more fun than trying to write a knight or a hero.
A lot of writers we speak to, you know, echo that. You know, the bad guys, they're far more fun to write.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny, my novel that came out in June, Pede, which is a good old style 1980s B movie creature feature novel. And a couple of people reviewed it, said, you know, that the characters are great, but there's really not one of them that is exceptionally likable. You know, but I think on the whole, maybe I'm a cynic. You know, most people are not. You know, not everybody's perfect. You know, a lot of people have something unlikable about them. I think that's more interesting. Unless it's
absolutely
just me. That could be.
No. I totally agree. It's all about the shades of gray for me. Like the motto of my series of my writing really is: there's no evil. There's only desire and what you will do to obtain it. So really, it's all about the choices and the things you're willing to do to get what you want. So that's what separates the villains from the non-villains, or the anti-heroes from the people they fight. You know, it's just those small choices in the heat of the moment, what you decide to do when the chips are down, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Again, it gives you the option to, I guess, you create that man's code of ethics, you know, and being half demon, I can imagine that ethics is not high on his priority list.
Absolutely not. But that's actually a really interesting thing to get into is, okay, what would a person like this, both with his profession and his heritage, what would drive him to kill? What would stop him from killing? What would be his motivation for both the good and the bad action? So it's a really interesting sort of road to walk down to look at the character of this sort of person and think, okay, what would he do? Because it's totally different from anything in the modern world, and yet his problems are so relatable. He's an outcast trying to find a way to belong. He has no real way to connect with anybody, so he's lonely. Just like making a character like this, an impossible, fantastical character, so much of an everyman. It's such a fun challenge.
And I've said the little bit that obviously, hopefully you're going to read it for us in a few minutes. Really, it pulls you into the intrigue, and you know, it's certainly something that I'd want to read more about. You know, it's I must admit, I'm a big demon fan myself, and I write about demons, not half human demons. I like the idea of having the mix, but I think for me, you know, it's you can make your own rules, and you know, you can give them whatever characters you want, really, because you know, ultimately they're not human. But I say having a mix. Again, I mean, the backstory to the guy, so how a half human person actually came out would be a book all in itself. Should you ever do a prequel?
Probably the weirdest romance ever.
it would make 50 Shades of Grey look tame. Well, to be fair, it was tame anyway, but it would make it look ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, is that something would you do that? Would you delve into how he came about, or is that sort of a mystery?
I've never really given it much thought. The whole concept behind this person is he has no memories of his past. So that's one very important element of the story, is he's trying to find out who he is, where he came from. And so he has no memories of any parents or family, brothers and sisters, any of that. He just has very sparse memories of someone who we later discover is his wife. And so she's sort of the only link to his past that I wanted to delve into. I didn't really think that, like, the whole concept of this character is that he has no formative influences, because every so often he gets his memory erased. So the people that he finds, or the situations that he finds himself in after these memory erasures, sort of define who he is and what he becomes. But then there's also certain elements of his psyche and his memory and personality that remain consistent throughout. He's had similar traits for all the thousands of years he's been alive. So it's this real weird, interesting mix of a completely new character and a very ancient character.
Wow, yeah. So I like, yeah, the memory erased thing sort of kind of keeps it, keeps the intrigue going, because obviously he doesn't know, he doesn't know what he is, so, you know, I guess that brings, you know, draws the reader in to try and try and figure it all out for him. I guess as a reader, you're obviously sitting from the outside, you actually know more about him than he does, which I guess, you know, helps to keep you engaged. I like that. So how long have you been writing? Is this your first big project, or you have more stuff out there?
This was my first big project. I self-published a novel in 2013. Yeah, 2014. Sorry, I started work in 2013, published 2014. I wrote this novel, Blade of the Destroyer, in about 8 months and published it in 2015. The second book just got published in August, and the third book should be coming out early 2017. I am 60% of the way through book four, and I haven't started work on book five yet because I am working on another trilogy set in the same universe. I just signed a deal with a publisher, and I have to have – the book one is already written, and it's in the editing queue right now to be released in early 2017, and I have to have books two and three turned in by mid and late 2017. So I've got a lot of work on my hands. So I had to press pause a little bit on that series to get these two at least sorted, and by mid-2017, I'll resume work on the Hunter series.
Wow, yeah. So you're going to be pretty much tied up for the next few years, I would say, doing that long.
Yeah, at least another 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, certainly in my mind, you know, the first parallel, I guess, I would draw would be with Game of Thrones. Has that been an influence for you, or am I wide of the mark?
Well, Game of Thrones has influenced all fantasy now because of the realism of the stories. Like, since Game of Thrones became so popular, people have a greater appreciation for fantasy. So you have political, historical, mystery, thriller, romance, crime, all of these fans from all these different genres sort of flocking to fantasy thanks to Game of Thrones. And so they're bringing all of their expectations for these other genres to the fantasy genre. So as a fantasy writer, I have to step up my game and really appeal to all of these genres. So it's about trying to find a way to bring all of these important elements together. So in that way, Game of Thrones has affected every fantasy and science fiction writer. But the influences that I drew from, they're not Game of Thrones as much as more fantastical series. An excellent series that I really enjoyed was The Night Angel by Brent Weeks, about an assassin. And so when I was writing The Hunter, I tried to channel the way the people felt about his character and put that into my character, and then of course make him unique, but sort of that dread that people have when they speak the name The Hunter, that's what I got that from the Brent Weeks series, which I really enjoyed.
Awesome. Okay. Right. Okay. Well, I've held off long enough. I'm trying to hear you read this out. Is that okay with you? Can you do
Absolutely.
Your reading for us? Fantastic.
Yeah, but I'll need you to do the other voice.
The what other voice?
Well, there's two characters. That's Lord Danaros and the Fifth. So I think you'd be perfect for Lord Danaros because he's a very elegant sounding person and your accent is perfect. So I'll read the narrator parts and you can read the Danaros parts, all right?
I will try and keep up. Okay, so
I will, very short.
I will send you the bill in the post as well. Okay, and if I miss my cue, just give me a nudge. Okay, go for it.
Absolutely. All right. The clacking of Lord Danaros' boots echoed in the silence of the corridor. His apprehension increased as he reached the heavy bloodwood doors to his office, and he hesitated a moment before pushing the doors open. They closed behind him with a click that sounded ominously loud in the quiet room. Waiting in tense silence, unwilling to speak first, Lord Danaro studied the figure standing beside the fire. A dark cloak hid the man's features from view, but firelight glowed off the myriad scars crisscrossing the man's hands. That's you.
Is that me now?
So, thank you.
The fifth, thought Lord Danaros.
Sweat rolled down his back and his heart thundered. The man before him set his nerves on edge.
What in the fiery hell is he doing here?
My master has concerns, said the man, not turning to face Danaros. After your failure to deliver the promised goods.
The failure was not mine,
spat Danaros, his eyes flashing.
Lord Damuria was charged with the task, and it is he who has failed to arrive in time.
Damuria is dead, said the man simply. The fifth turned to face Lord Danaros, and the aristocrat shrank back from the intensity of the man's gaze. You and he were given the task, and you have failed. My master
will be pleased to know that I have an alternative,
Danaros said hurriedly.
The first shipment arrived last night, and another is on the way.
You would do well to inform him in person, said the fifth, turning back to the fire.
I will compose a letter immediately. You can take it to him.
I am no messenger, the fifth snarled.
Of course,
Danaros stammered.
I will arrange for it to be delivered.
Good. The man turned to face the sweating aristocrat. See that you do. His voice held an edge of steel, chilling Lord Danaros to the bone. Sweat broke out on the nobleman's palms. The grim figure walked to the huge doors through which Lord Danaros had entered. I can show myself out, my lord. The door shut behind the fifth with a loud click, plunging the office into silence. The shadows pressed in on Danaros, and his pulse raced. He breathed deeply, struggling to master his fear. He hurried to his massive desk and threw himself into his chair. His desk drawer held a feather pen and inkpot. He ignored the shaking of his hand as he began to write furiously. His pen flew across the page, ink dribbling from the nib. In his hurry, he abandoned elegance in favor of speed. He knew the one who would read his missive wouldn't care what the words looked like, providing the contents of the message satisfied him. Sweat dripped down Danaros' forehead onto the parchment, and the sound of his quick breathing matched the hurried scratching of pen on paper. Finally, it was done. He stared at the contents of the letter, reading over every word. He hoped it would placate the man who had sent the fifth. Lord Danaros removed a small seal and a pot of wax from the desk drawer. He had just removed the stopper when a harsh, grating voice rang out in the silence of the office. Lord Danaros, your day of reckoning has come.
Oh, that is awesome.
The end.
Thank you for letting me join in with that. I enjoyed that. It was great. I hope I did Lord Danaros justice there.
You did it great.
It's funny. In my mind, I was a bit disappointed that he was subservient there. I was hoping he'd be sort of like, you know, Darth Vader sort of character, you know, and he'd be the man. But no, he was obviously on the back foot there.
Yeah.
Bless him.
Yeah, well, he's about to die. Spoiler alert.
Oh, no, I was being the character. You've gone and killed him.
Yes. Absolutely.
No, boo. Oh, I'm disappointed now.
There's a lot of characters like that in the book that just end up dead, so.
Oh, bless him. Okay, well, so don't spoil anymore. So where can we find this awesome tome?
Well, you can pop over to my website, andypeliquin.com, or look for me on Facebook or Twitter or Google+ or YouTube, and everything is under Andy Peliquin. Just Google search that, and you will find it.
So you're on Amazon and Kindle and everything known to man, yeah?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Good place to be. Okay, well, sadly, yeah. we're out of time now. That's what you must do. Promise me you'll pop back. When is the next volume out? You said is it early next year? Early 2017?
Yeah, 2017.
Did you have a more definite? I mean, when it's out, come back on the show and do some more reading. I mean, obviously, if Danaros is dead, I mean, obviously I can't do him anymore, but
Yeah, absolutely. In January, I have a new book in a new series coming out, and then in maybe March or April, the third book in this series will be coming out. So you'll hear from me in no time.
Oh, hey, so beginning of next year, yeah, let's get you back on the show. And if you've got that much going on, maybe we do give you the whole show.
Hey, I'm happy to help you host anytime.
Do the whole show. That would be fantastic. Yeah, I mean, as long as I can do more readings, I'm
yeah.
This is the second time this has happened to me. We had one guest who flatly refused to do his own reading because, you know, it was a valid point. You know, he said he didn't like to read his own because he liked the reader to read it in their own mind, in their own voice, which is...
Yeah,
great, you know, that's, he wasn't being chicken or anything. He was a great guy, you know. But I totally got that. But plus as well, it gave me a chance to do some reading, so I was happy. I was a happy buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, we're going to have to say goodbye now. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a blast to have you on. Thank you, and hopefully we'll see you again in the new year.
All right.
Okay. All the best. Speak to you later. Bye-bye. There we go. What a great guy. That was fun. I enjoyed that. So we're going to play a tune now. One of my favorite songs, all about a serial killer. So a little bit cheerful. So we'll listen to this, and then we're going to be back with Michael Gagan, who'll be entertaining us for the second half of the show.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with its teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life, and someone sneaking round a corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight to dare. Five will get you 10, old Mackey's back in town. Now did you hear about Louis Miller? He disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie spins just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? Now, nah, did he dive a ho, ho, yeah, to his tawdry? Woo, Miss Lottie Lenya and old Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie's back in town. Jenny Diver, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Lenya and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town.
Back. Mack the Knife there from the late, great Bobby Darin. I'm a big fan of Bobby Darin. That song, incidentally, can be found on my best-selling CD, but you didn't know that, which can be found hidden in my wife's nightstand drawer. Odd story. Many, many years ago, amongst everything that I've been involved in over the years, including stand-up comedy, I have an absolute mortal fear of singing in public. So one year, I think for our anniversary, I actually recorded a CD with Mack the Knife, and on the B-side was They Can't Take That Away From Me, I believe. And apart from me and my wife and the guy in the studio helped me record it, nobody's ever heard it and probably never will. But hey, you know, it's about facing your fears and whatnot, which I think certainly as horror writers is something we do. But I certainly, to be fair, having said that, and it's back to Extina's favourite subject, and I'm going to play this again just to... I am a big lover of karaoke when I've had a few beers. And one of those things, the more beer you drink, the more like Frank Sinatra you think you sound. And then probably don't, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I better do the sponsor thing. I'm having so much fun. I've got Extina to rope me in and say, oh, we've got to do the commercials now. Because she does actually talk like that in real life. Yeah, so remember jadedbookspublishing.com, where you can find certainly some of my books, Extina's books. Who else do we usually mention? Panicroomradio.com, www.jameslongmore.com, which is me. So anybody interested in listening to reading any of my books, not listening to my CD, that will never be on sale. Don't worry. I think I've mentioned everybody I was supposed to mention. If not, I'm sure Extina will probably shout at me next week, I'm sure. So, hey, we've got another awesome guest, Michael Gagan, whose book, Redolence of Roses, which is dark erotic prose and poetry. I love dark poetry. Something I've gotten into recently, having read Extina's book, oddly enough, Dark Musings. I've never really been able to write poetry. I've always been sort of a bit of in awe of writers who can write poetry, because for me, you know, poetry is, you know, there once was a young man from Nantucket sort of thing. For me, that's poetry. I don't even remember the rest of that one, to be quite honest with you. So hopefully we have Michael on the line. And Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am here. This is James.
Hey, you're there. Good to hear you, sir. How are you?
And how are you? Thank you.
I'm having a great time, actually. I've not got Extina to boss me about, so I'm like a kid with the keys to the candy store at the moment. So thank you for joining us.
Yes, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So you're missing Extina. I know. I hopefully you're not too disappointed. It's just me. I mean, Extina does add a wonderful feminine touch to the show, but sadly she's. I think the official line is she has a bad back. So let's stick with that, I think, for now.
Yes. Yep. I agree.
So, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, tell us about the Redolence of Roses, sir.
Redolence of Roses is it's very dark. It's erotic, but it's dark. It has to do with basements and chains, and but the serial killer is always compassionate about his victims. He shows a lot of passion and compassion. It's not like your typical serial killer type writing. A lot of it's written in the form of like Edgar Allan Poe. A lot of it's prose. I don't hold to the form on poetry. I kind of go off in my own way. And my fan base has built pretty good over the last couple of years. And that's I have 5 books of poetry out, but that's my number one seller right now, is Redolence of Roses.
Wow, 5. So is it poetry what you do, or do you write novels as well, short stories?
Yes, I'm working on several short stories right now that are going to be standalone published short stories. you know, between 8,000 and 15,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am. I have a page on Facebook, Black Rain Manor, where I do all that writing. That way I avoid reporting, people reporting, because mm-hmm. the stuff is so dark, you know.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Well, do you get your page, have you had your page pulled down, or have you managed to dodge the Facebook police so far?
No, I was writing on my personal page, but there was a lot of reporting because friends of friends were saying it. A lot of people weren't happy about it. So I made a secret group called Black Rain Manor. That way,
right.
those invited, those that are fans of my work are in there. And I've had that for almost 2 years now, and there's not been a problem with that.
Oh, right. Cool. So Facebook have not. So your work is all sort of dark erotic.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? I've got to ask why. What drew you to that?
Well, many years ago, I was a drug addict. And quite a few years ago, I traded the drugs for a pen, and I never looked back. I never wrote a word in my life. I'm 53 years old, so it's other than my regular job now, it's my life is writing. So, yeah, it's been quite a life. It's been quite a muse, my past, you know?
Uh-huh. So obviously,
but I'm not really
people
ask me all the time, well, I'm not really a dark person. I just have a really vivid imagination. I love to write about the dark.
Do you feel it's that sort of exorcising some of the darkness from your previous life, or is it just, like
absolutely.
You say, it's just all imagination?
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of like, I guess you can kind of call it like a therapy. I don't really like to use that word, but believe me, it helps. It keeps me on the straight and narrow.
I think a lot of writers can will identify with that, you know. Certainly, you know, we a lot of it is, I guess, is magic, but it has to come from somewhere. And I think we all have that sort of dark.
But the funny thing
dark,
is,
dark
James, place. They ask me. The funny thing is, the fans, they ask me all the time that, you know, do you really live these things? Have you done these things? Or do you really do these things? And I gotta laugh because I just. You know, once I get my imagination going, it's on point. It just comes from my mind, you know. I don't really change rules up in my basement. In fact, I don't even have a basement. So I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but you know what I mean?
But if you had a basement, would you?
No, but yeah, the thought would be there, though.
Yeah, and the official line there is no.
Yes.
It's good, you know,
answer.
I mean... I actually have a T-shirt my wife bought me. You know, if you're not nice to me, you'll end up in my next novel. You know, I guess as a writer, any artist, certainly as a writer, you know, we can experience through our art, you know, through our work, we can experience the things that we would like to do. That, you know, a lot of people, I think a lot of people harbor dark and nasty thoughts, but we actually get to let them out and if they live them as we're writing. And obviously the beauty of it, when somebody's reading it, those, you know, the readers are living it as well. You know, you're putting those dark things into their mind.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's an interesting job when you think about it.
It is, and my fans love that because I write outside the box. You know, I just don't conform to any. I just write whatever comes to my mind, whatever story I come up with. That's what I put down on paper.
Yeah. So who influences you? Who do you follow?
Charles Bukowski and Edgar Allan Poe, of course. And Emily Dickinson, of course.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even know she wrote a lot of dark stuff. She wasn't all about vanilla. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, and I like this is kind of outside my realm, but I like Ralph Waldo Emerson too. I'm sure you heard of him.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got quite
eclectic is good. You know, I mean, it's nice, you know, to read outside of your. Of your genre, to expand your mind,
It teaches you. You learn, you know.
But then do you find that the non-genre stuff sort of gets drawn into what you're writing?
Oh, yeah, at times. I mean, so I write outside my realm a lot. I write about love and passion and flowers and butterflies, and I write about that stuff too. But my fan base seems to really be drawn to that dark erotic, so that's where I keep getting drawn back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I guess part of it, I mean, you know, once you start building up a fan base, I guess, you know, you have to cater for your fans. You have to give them what they want.
Yes, exactly.
I think once you get on that vein, you know, it's a brave writer who sort of ventures off that path.
Uh-huh.
You know, until you sort of get into the realms of Stephen King, you know, who can pretty much write what he wants. You know, it's like anything. You know, Ford makes a motor car with a wheel at each corner. They're not just going to suddenly, oh well, you know, let's do a three wheeler or a five wheeler. You know, you do what sells, because at the end of the day, you know, without being sounding too cynical, it's business. You know, we sell books to, you know, to put food on the table and buy the kids shoes and whatnot. So
yes, although for me, James, that's secondary, because I enjoy writing it. Like I said, it's my passion now. If I sell a few books one day, I do. If I don't, I don't. But I'm always going to be writing. Always thinking of the next story, the next poem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, my last book, The Lighter Side of Dark, that came out a month ago, is that's like a mix. That's a mix of dark and light poetry. There's some comedy pieces in there. There's some really light stuff. You know, it's just like a mix. That's the first book I did was actually mixed. All the prior books are completely dark, but.
Oh wow, why the mix? I mean, mixing comedy
in
there sounds.
Because every once in a while I do like to write about love and passion, you know, without the chains and the torture devices and the basement.
Old romantic, you.
Yeah. So I'm catering to another fan base kind of when I write that stuff. You know, in other words, people that will comment on a poem from The Lighter Side of Dark, they might not comment on something from Redlands of Roses or Twisted Rhyme from An Altered Mind.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we gotta keep the masses happy, I guess, you know.
Yeah, does that I guess puts you in touch with a different fan base, really? Yeah, you sort of reaching out to new people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, I think I said on my intro, you know, one of the things that, as a writer, as you know, someone who you know, like yourself, works with words in different forms, poetry. I mean, poetry has always eluded me as a writer. You know, I can't write poetry to save my life. I mean, what makes good poetry?
Well, that's the funny thing, James. See, with me, it's the opposite way around. I started in poetry. That's why there's five poetry books. But now, in the manner I've been writing several short stories, I do them in parts. I give people a taste of it, and it's having an overwhelming response. And I really like, apparently I'm quite good at the short stories, so I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to take a break from the poetry now. I published my last poetry book a month ago, and now it's time to move on. You know, I have at least four short stories I want to get printed by the end of next year. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes, you know.
Yeah, so are you doing an anthology of short stories, or are you going to dot them about?
No. They're going to be standalone. James Patterson does that now, but I had the idea a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Because usually you always get a bunch of short stories in a book, but I want to do standalones. So you buy the book, you're buying the story. You know what I mean?
Yes, I guess.
Instead
so you would just
three,
buy
instead of
that
putting
short.
Three story, instead of putting three stories in one book, I want them to all stand on their own. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand. It's something an idea I've not come across before. I mean, is there a market? Again, with my cynical business head on, is there a market out there?
I just saw an advertisement for James Patterson. He does it now. He does short stories by themselves. Yeah. Of course, he cranks them out McDonald's cranks.
That guy writes some stuff. Because I know he's ventured into young adult as well and kids' books. We went to see the my daughter dragged me to see the middle school, the worst years of my life film. And I didn't realize until the credits came on at the end, and I am one of those sad people who watch reads the credits at the end of the film, and that James Patterson actually co-wrote that.
Yeah,
I think it was just a young adult movie, you know. Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know you mentioned that.
So, well, like I say, you know, like I said before, you know, when you are James Patterson or Stephen King or Clive Barker or, you know, put name of big international selling author here, you know, you can do that. You can explore with different avenues.
Yeah, especially when you're already a big name, you can diversify.
You can do anything, pretty much, yeah. So, I mean, you must come on the show once you've got your short stories out there and let us know how that goes. You know, I'd be interested to see. I think it's a great idea.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people want bite-sized stories. You know, they just want those.
From,
you know,
from
I can see somebody doing
that. From what I understand, a lot of people can't focus on more than, you know, 20 chapters or 8,000 or 9,000 words, you know, but I don't know. I'm going to try it anyway and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to see what happens. I think they'll stand alone by themselves, though, because like I said, the response has been overwhelming. The parts that I've put in, the little teaser pieces that I write, I put a couple of chapters in the banner, and the response has been better with that than my poetry as of late, so... People are really excited about this stuff coming out.
I think in the, you know, this day and age of Kindle and Nook and, you know, I mean, to be fair, you can read anything anywhere now. You know, I think people buying some bite-sized stories, I think I can see that doing well. So yeah, hey, you must keep us posted and let us know how that goes.
I'll tell you, James, another genre that I really want to get into that's people are begging for more is the my recorded audio pieces that I do are going over really well, because my brother is like a recording engineer, and we lay down the tracks and I add the sound effects and stuff, and I put it on SoundCloud and it's going over really well. It's popular and people want more. So that's another thing I'm going to be working on. In other words, I want to have an audio CD maybe in the next 6 or 8 months of just my spoken word pieces. You know, with the effects and stuff on
them. On that note, as a clumsy segue, we actually have one called Terrified. May we play that now?
Yes.
Right, okay, I'm going to cue it up and we'll play that now.
The capillaries in your eyes begin to burst. Your face turning purple is quenching my thirst. The veins in your head are starving for blood. Your gurgling saliva comes in a flood. I remove the ligature from around your neck, smiling coyly, void of repent. I leave you a string of beautiful pearls from your breast to your pussy, a mess unfurled. I am the nightmare you had as a child, the thing under your bed, nasty and vile. I lived in your closet and haunted your mind. 20 years later, and I've paid you mine. I break your fingers one at a time. I thrust into you deeper, the feeling sublime. You're screaming, enhancing my orgasmic bliss. I give you a heartfelt, passionate kiss. I read you your horoscope for this day. It reads, stay home, keep demons away. Lucky for me, you came out to play. I picked you up like a cute little stray. I will drop you off at the door to your home. You will never again walk the streets alone. Bloody, broken, crying, and beat. You will forever remember the day of defeat. Don't forget to check under your bed. It just may be me to fuck with your head. Look into your closet, look deep in your find. Forever reside in your terrified mind.
Wow. Wow, how do you follow that? That was awesome. That was awesome.
That's my favorite.
Was that your voice? Was that you reading that?
Yes, that's me reading it. And my brother, the engineer, he changed the pitch on my voice a little bit. He stretched the pitch a little bit.
Yeah. That is awesome. So your plan is to do a whole a whole compilation of those. I mean, I like
yeah,
that.
No,
I
want to do an audio CD with like maybe 18 tracks of all spoken word pieces with the effects and yes.
Wow. And how long does it take to put one of those together? I mean, I've worked with, shot short films and worked with sound and whatnot, and it's very time consuming. I mean, how long does it take to put something like that together?
Yeah, it takes a few days, James, because it's 128 track recording program we got, so I lay down the vocal tracks, and then I cut my effects in on a separate track, and then he splices them together with the fade in, the fade out, and exactly what it's supposed to be in the timing. Yeah, it takes a few days.
Yeah, there's something very, what's the word, very evocative with the heartbeat, and obviously the girl crying in the background.
Well, it's different because most people that go on SoundCloud, they speak into the microphone, their piece, and they're done. That's it. But I just wanted to do something a little different, you know.
Well, you've added
really well, though.
Uh huh. You've added a layer of atmosphere. I think that it's funny. I was living that. I was just playing it as a movie in my head, you know. And it was really brought it to life. You know?
That's a compliment, James. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, no, I'm just saying as I see. You know, I was I could quite happily listen to a whole CD of that. I'm sure you couldn't listen to a CD of my singing, to be honest with you.
I heard on the last bit there about your singing. Yes.
There is a natural reason why I have a phobia of singing. I think to save mankind. I think to save mankind.
That's like
so,
me. I can never get up. That's like me, James. I could never get up on like a stage in front of people and like do spoken word poetry. I could never do that. It's just not in me. I know for a fact I could never ever do that. But
well, do you know, it's
fascinating. Behind us.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, I've done stand up. I've done stand up in front of 200-300 people. Not a problem. Happy to do that. But you asked me. You stick a mic in my hand. Asked me to sing. Nah, I just clam up. Unless I've had a few beers. Few beers, not a problem. I'm Frank Sinatra, not a problem.
Exactly. At least we think we are, anyway.
Well, yeah, there is that. So where can we find your work, sir?
My work is on, if you type in my name, Michael Gagan, on Facebook, my personal page comes up, and there's links on there to my author page and the Black Rain Manor I was telling you about. There's also links on there for SoundCloud. And,
awesome.
And my Twitter and all that stuff that goes with it.
Yeah, Twitter. I guess you're on Amazon and et cetera, et cetera. All the usual places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a website? You wanna? We've got a minute or two left. You have a website to plug or?
Well, my Facebook page is just facebook.com Michael Fixer Gagan. That'll bring me up. That's
brilliant.
Black Rain.
Okay.
I go by the pen name Black Rain.
Yeah, I think you and I are friends on there, so I found you easily. That's brilliant. No, that's great. As long as people can find you and get hold of your poetry. So, sadly, that's all we have time for.
We need to have you back.
We need to have a longer show.
Awesome. James, I want to thank Xtina for inviting me, and I want to tell her to feel better. Hope she feels better soon.
Hopefully she'll get over a bad back, yeah, and we'll be. Hopefully she'll be back next week. So, okay. So, get yourself back on the show, and then you can be able to chat to Xtina in person instead of having to put up with me for half an hour. Okay, Michael. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to sign out now with a song, and we will hopefully speak to you again very, very soon.
Okay. Thank you so much, James.
Okay. Bye bye.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. You broke my heart when you said we'll part. Ain't that a shame? My still feel like rain. Cry, ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. When you said goodbye, ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. Oh well, goodbye. Although I cry, ain't that a shame? You feel like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one.